It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the 19th hole. I'm your host, Michael Williams, bringing you the best of the best of the best in golf and golf lifestyle. This show is going to be very, very special. We have one of my, in addition to being one of my favorite people, he is one of the most influential people in the game today. He is Derek Sprague, the CEO of the PGA of America. Derek has really carved out some time to spend with us. And I couldn't be more excited because there's so much to know about the game, about the game that we love, about where it's going, what it has been through, both on the professional side, on the amateur side, on the enjoyment side, the recreational side. His organization really covers the game from every aspect you could possibly imagine, and I can't wait to talk to him about it. It's going to be an unbelievably useful and exciting talk. Coming up right after that, we have another one of my very good friends. I have a lot of friends on the show this week. I'm excited because these guys are just really just exceptional servants of the game, and they're also exceptional people. Augustine Pizza, or I should say Pizza, Augustine Pizza, who is one of the most exciting golf course architects, golf course designers out there. He is, it's just not only what he does on the course, but the way his mind works is so fascinating. I can't wait for you to hear what he has to say about golf, about life, about anything. He could talk about cooking, it'd be interesting, but he's going to talk mostly about golf today. So Augustine Pizza and, of course, Derek Sprague joining us here on the 19th hole. As my mantra often is, less of me, more of them. So in the meantime, why don't you go get yourself a cold beverage and a crunchy snack, and we'll be right back with the 19th hole. I'm Michael Williams. See you in a minute.
Hey there, Jay Peterman here, John O'Hurley, and you are listening to Michael Williams and the 19th hole.
Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. And I consider it part of my duty to you to bring you the leaders of the game of golf. So we talk a lot about where we can go and where we can play and what we can play with and all those things that are extremely important to the game. But there are people who make the game available, who are working literally day and night to make sure that we have the opportunity to play, that we have the places to play, the right conditions to play, all these things, they don't happen by accident. And I'm fortunate to know some of the people that do that for a living, but none I consider more talented, more essential, and I hope he thinks so too, a better friend than our next guest. He is the CEO of the PGA of America. Please welcome Derek Sprague to the 19th hole. Derek, how are you, my friend?
Good, Michael. It's great to reconnect with you and glad to hear things are going well with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's busy. You don't really have a non-busy time anymore, do you? There really is no off season for your position, is there?
No, I mean, that's one thing that, you know, in this new role, I've been in this role for about 10 months and, you know, great respect for our team here at the PGA of America and all the employees that we have scattered around the country, assisting our PGA professionals. There is no off time, Michael, as you said. And whether we're hosting national junior leagues championships or having career consultants help our PGA professionals with their next opportunity, we're engaged 365 days a year. And I think, as your opening said, you know, we're working around the clock to serve our members and grow the game. And I'm excited to be part of the team.
You know, you're doing a fine job at both of those things. For those who don't know, would you please give a brief description of the PGA, its founding, its mission, its vision, what the PGA of America is all about?
Yeah, our mission, you know, dating back to 1916 is to elevate our PGA professionals. So, you know, our two big buckets, if you will, I just mentioned is serving our members. We have over 30,000 members and associates today, and then growing the game. And it's our 30 plus thousand PGA members and associates that are doing programs like PGA Junior League and PGA Hope and just engaging with the golf consumers out there to get them to take up the sport. And, you know, whether that's off course, there's millions of off course golfers, if you will, that are playing at Top Golf, or indoor simulators and other concepts are popping up out there as on ramps to green grass facilities. And then with the 16,000 plus or minus golf facilities in the country, and we have thousands of our PGA members at those facilities growing the game. So yeah, over 100 years old now, Michael, and we're true to our mission. And our role here at the PGA of America is to make sure that we're elevating the stature of the PGA professionals, and we're focused on that, as well as getting people involved with the sport. And we've seen tremendous growth, right, since the pandemic, and there's no signs of that slowing down, as early indications in 2025 is that we're continuing to grow with more people playing the game.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, the pandemic, because you're absolutely right. Since the pandemic, the game has seen a surge that's, to me, even more effective than the quote-unquote Tiger boom that we saw in the early part of the 2000s, because it's not driven by a person, it's driven by people wanting to get out and play the game, and not play the game like a particular guy. They just want to experience golf. And I just want to get your view of it. Is this something that we see as a lasting thing? Do we see it as a trend, or how is it from your point of view? Because the growth is real, but is it something that we can sustain?
I think so. You know, words that we haven't heard in a while, Michael, of social distancing. And when the PGA of America was right in the sort of the center of the pandemic, and we fought hard working with the administration in Washington to keep golf open in this country where everything was being shuttered and shut down, we worked hard to keep the game of golf open around the country. And it was our PGA professionals in the center of that had to adhere to strict guidelines of, hey, if you want to keep golf open, you have to do this. Remember, we were sanitizing golf carts. Some were putting plastic between the driver's seat and the passenger seat in these golf carts. Individuals were riding in golf carts. So our PGA professionals, I'm so proud of them. They adapted. But, you know, one thing my mother said to a friend in the beauty salon years ago, Michael, was, you know, golf courses are America's safest playgrounds. And it takes on a new meaning after the pandemic. And what we saw, and why I think we have some retention here, is because families, a lot of them moved back together, right? The kids moved back home, didn't know what was going to go on with this pandemic. And then they said, well, hey, we can go out and play golf together as a family unit, and multi-generational, right? We had grandparents playing with their grandkids and parents playing with their children. And they built that bond over really a two-year period, probably in 2020 and 2021. And in some parts of the country, it lingered into early 2022. And when you build that connection with your family unit, and you built it on a golf course, and you know, parents and grandparents didn't want to be left at home alone, and they took up the game during that period. And now they realize, wow, I'm not on the sidelines watching my kids or grandkids play a particular sport. They're participating with them. They're enjoying, whether they're playing 9 holes or 18 holes, or enjoying hours together without distractions of cell phones, and they're enjoying that companionship. And, you know, whether they're doing it on course or off course, out here at PGA Frisco, they have a two-acre putting course. My first weekend here, I saw hundreds of families out there just enjoying each other's company. And I think that's this wave or this surge that you referenced in the game today, where we're above the pre-pandemic levels. and it's continued to tick up, certainly not at the rate we saw maybe in 21, 22, or 23, but we're still seeing increases in the game of a few percentage points, which is significant when you're talking about 28 million golfers and 550 million rounds of golf being played in this country today.
Yeah, that's a very, very, very large number, and it translates to a lot of essentially to a lot of people having a good time and enjoying the game, getting to know what the game is all about, which is people, in my humble opinion. So many people have looked at professional golf and think that it's the whole game is about the lowest score. That's certainly part of it, but it's really about having the best time. And the PGA professional is certainly skilled at doing that. We're talking to Derek Sprague, the CEO of the PGA of America, here on the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host and Sherpa. Let's talk about some of the successes of the PGA of America, because as I say, you guys are working hard and you're not the only one. There's lots of people working very, very hard around the clock to make sure that the game is not only available, but also thriving and making sure that people can compete at all levels, whether it's just recreational, whether it's competitive, all of those things. Talk about some of the things and forget the humility, because I know PGA professionals and guys like you are so good at being humble, but brag a little bit about what you think have been some of the biggest successes over the course of the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, I think when you look at our growth of the game programs, in particular PGA Junior League, we're going to top 80,000 juniors in this league now, PGA Junior League. And, you know, our PGA professionals continually say it's one of the best programs that we've ever launched, getting kids out sort of in a social but competitive environment. And I think, you know, when we bought that program or that league in 2015, Michael, you know, I said it's not going to be too long in the distant future that we're going to have these kids that played in PGA Junior League make our Ryder Cup team someday. And that day is coming pretty quickly. You know, maybe in our centennial in 2027 or 2029, when we come back to Hazeltine, we'll see some of those PGA Junior League kids. But and then another great program through our PGA Reach Foundation is PGA Hope, where we're saving veterans' lives. We're building communities across this country. And our PGA professional is in the center of that, getting certified to instruct these veterans that may have invisible challenges, like mental challenges that we don't see, or they may be amputees. And it's our PGA professional that's helping them enjoy a game of golf, giving them purpose to get out of bed in the morning and to take up this great game. And then also under our PGA Reach umbrella is PGA Works, where we're helping people from underrepresented communities get involved and get access to the game. And then as well as our Opportunity Leagues, which is part of PGA Junior League. Again, we're getting corporations to help prop those Opportunity Leagues up and give people of underrepresented communities access to take up this game. And that'll continue to pay dividends down the road. And then we're just coming off our annual meeting and seeing our Hall of Fame winners like Dennis Walters and Nancy Lopez and just great people of the game. And then, of course, our award winners that you think you're doing a good job. And until you watch the incredible work of our award winners, Scott Paris, the Golf Professional of the Year, as you mentioned, just as humble as can be, gives the credit to his team at Plainfield Country Club. But really, it's our, you know, 30,000 plus PGA professionals and associates that are doing this day in and day out. They don't have to be at a top club in the country. Sometimes it's the small nine-hole courses that are just doing incredible work in a rural area, giving true meaning in life to people to take up this game. And they're heroes of the game of golf as well. So whether it's an award winner, Hall of Famer, or a PGA professional in a rural area, they're making a difference in this game, growing a lifetime sport. My grandfather took up the game at age 74, so it's never too late to take up this game. And usually it's a PGA professional in the center of that, storm, if you will, of this growth that we're seeing that are doing programs around the country to help people get involved.
Well, I think that's really admirable. All the things that that you have done for so many people. And I think that a lot of people don't get the full scope of what the PGA does accomplish or can accomplish when you give them a chance to do that. But you're doing so much good within communities. Is there anything that you're aiming at doing now? Are there new programs that are being suggested or promoted at this time?
Yeah, my new seat here, one thing that we'll be working with our the PGA of America has 41 PGA sections around the country. They all have executive directors, and they have their own leadership of president, vice president, and secretary. And the we're working with those 41 sections and making sure that we're not getting too wide in the programs that we do. Like, what are the ones that are meaningful? What are the ones that are growing the game? What are the ones that are serving our members the best? And making sure that we get focused on those programs, some that I just mentioned, to make sure that we're getting the right resources, whether it's financial or human capital, to those 41 sections and our 30 plus thousand PGA professionals to help them in their careers and to help them continue to grow the game so that we can retain golfers and we can continue to grow new golfers in this game. So we're going to be focused on that in the coming months of building out our long-term strategic plan of what's working and what's not. And let's not forget that the PGA of America also has major spectator championships on every tour, the women's, the seniors, the men's, and then including the Ryder Cup. Those assets that we have help grow the game, tell the story of the PGA professional and all the great work that we're doing on the ground, if you will. We're the connection to millions of golfers in this country, and it's that PGA professional that those millions of golfers should seek out to enjoy the game, whether they're a beginner or they wanna get better to enjoy this great game. So those are things that we'll be focused on, tuning up going into 2026. We're doing a great job, but we can always look for improvements, and we're going to be relying on our 41 sections as well as our 30 plus thousand members and associates.
Outstanding. And we'll sort of close up things. I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about and congratulate once again folks who were national award recipients at the 109th meeting, I think you had in PGA Frisco. Golf Professional of the Year, Teacher and Coach of the Year, and you have a new honorary member as well. If you want to talk a little bit about some of those people.
Yeah, like I said, you know, it's really a moving evening to see our award winners. And, you know, I know it inspires everybody in the audience and those that watch these stories of these incredible PGA professionals that are really moving the needle in their hometowns, their hometown heroes, if you will, for the golfers at their facilities or those that visit those facilities, and just really doing some unique things. And it's really, like I said, inspiring and motivating to those that watch, because, you know, we have all the leaders at our annual meeting throughout the country, and so they're all great PGA professionals as well. And yeah, and then to see these award winners, you're like, I can do more. And I think that's inspiring in itself. And then this year, you know, we had our 13th inductee as an honorary PGA professional. Peter Broome has been a longtime executive with Acushnet and Titleist. He mentored so many PGA professionals in his career. And it was a very moving afternoon on Thursday of our general session at the PGA annual meeting, where we made him the 13th honorary PGA member of our association, which was very fitting. I don't think there's too many PGA professionals that, whether they were with the Titleist brand or not, Peter had an impact on them, and we're so proud that he's now a member of the PGA of America. And it was great to see the leadership team here from Acushnet here to support him and celebrate him, and his family was here, and it was just an incredible way to end our 109th annual meeting.
It is really an outstanding evening. I haven't been to the national meeting. I've been to a couple of the regional meetings and the award ceremonies, but when you look at the list of people who are lifetime honorary members, you have people including President Dwight Eisenhower, Gary Player, President Gerald Ford, Bob Hope, President George Bush, our good friend Joe Steranko, Joe Louis Barrow, the co-founder of the First Tee, Tim Rosefort was the last inductee, one of the truly special people that's ever been in golf, Tim Rosefort, and now Peter Broome. So it's a great evening and a great testament to the lasting impact of Peter Broome. I just want to ask you now, real quickly, I'll ask you this first. We had the Ryder Cup that was just passed. It was a great event in so many ways. I was at the event, and it was just fantastic golf. The first 2 days, the Europeans performed brilliantly, historically brilliant, and it was almost matched by the comeback on Sunday for the U.S. players. So much positive things going on the course. And then there's a lot of course, attention to things that are going on off the course. I'm sure you had a chance to attend. What were your impressions and thoughts from the event from this year?
Yeah, you know, the Ryder Cup just keeps growing, getting bigger and bigger, you know, especially outside the ropes. I was so proud of our commercial team and our ops team on the ground there. I mean, to see the competition, as you just referenced, was a brilliant play that Europe displayed on Friday and Saturday, and on Sunday we had them sweating for a couple hours in the afternoon, and the European officials came up to me and they were visibly sweating, you know, like, oh my gosh, you were giving us a heart attack there coming down the stretch. But we really pushed the envelope outside the ropes here. We did Ryder Cup Live in Rockefeller Center, and although that wasn't talked much about during the week because it was in downtown Manhattan, we had 250,000 people on the grounds at Bethpage, Michael, and we had 270,000 go through Ryder Cup Live in downtown Manhattan to really experience the Ryder Cup. We had a First Tee simulator there to give people a feel of what the First Tee was like. All of our partners were activating there, our worldwide Ryder Cup partners, give people a sneak peek on the grounds at Bethpage. We had Rao's Restaurant for our VIP clientele. We had a $10,000 per person experience, included helicopter in from the city. We had over 300 helicopter landings, shuttling people back and forth from New York City. So there was a lot going on outside the ropes that I was so proud of our team to really think big and try some of these different activations. The feedback that we got from spectators and our commercial partners was tremendous. It was so positive. And it just, you know, we're already talking about, okay, what do we do in 2029 in Minneapolis when we host it at Hazeltine, and what kind of activations can we do that our commercial partners will be looking for? And again, these are people that prop up the game as well. They invest in the game, and we're proud to have them as partners of the Ryder Cup and the PGA of America. So yeah, there was a lot of great things about this year's Ryder Cup, other than the score at the end of the day. Yeah. We do know, that we had some fans cross the line with some poor behavior, which we certainly don't condone, and it's unfortunate. And I've been talking to Guy Kinnings, who heads up Ryder Cup Europe, and we're going to focus on, as we go into 2027 at Adair Manor in Ireland, it's really getting back to the roots of the Ryder Cup that started in 1927. So as we head into the centennial, we're going to get back to sportsmanship, respect, yeah, integrity, and make sure that we get back to the real values of the game of golf. And I'm excited to embark on that with him and his leadership team and our team here to make sure that we restore the decorum and the sportsmanship that the Ryder Cup is all about. And that's what excites me as well.
I'm excited to hear you say that. Number one, to talk about the many successes that you had in growing the game and getting people to the game and getting special experiences. Footnote, I want to be on the helicopter in Ireland. So you just reserve a seat for me for the helicopter back and forth through to the course. But not only that, but it's the fact that you're looking at ways to improve, and you're focusing on the sportsmanship and the camaraderie that are really the key to the game. And we all know that when something gets more popular, more people come, some of those people will be people who do not, or are not familiar with, or do not behave, or typically not going to behave in the manner that they're supposed to, no matter where they are. So there's not only so much you can do about that, but I'm so glad to hear that you are cognizant of it and focusing on that as a signpost, as really this is a center of what we want to do, sportsmanship and camaraderie. That's really good news for a lot of people.
Yes. Yeah. And you got to remember, right, this is unlike any other golf tournament played, right? This is a sporting event where you have two opposing sides. It's the really, you know, they come together against one another, and they've done so for 98 years now. And to your point, they're passionate about their teams, right? And they want to see them win. It's not unlike a college football game or NFL game or whatever, where they're cheering for their team. And we just want to make sure that we instill the values of the Ryder Cup and what it was meant to be with Sam the Ryder back in 1927. And for years, that's the way it was. And the famous concession, right?
Yes.
Between Tony Jacklin and Jack Absolutely. Nicklaus really puts the cherry on top of what the Ryder Cup's all about. And that's what we want to get back to. And I think the players see that as well, right? They love the Ryder Cup, and they want to make sure that those values are continued.
Well, amen to that. Are you getting a chance to play any golf yourself, or are you just sitting around making golf available for everybody else? Hopefully you get a chance to hit a ball every now and then.
Yeah. Hey, at this beautiful campus here in Frisco, Texas, I have all sorts of practice areas and two championship golf courses and a short course here. So plenty of opportunity. I haven't played or practiced as much as I would like to. I've been diving in here my first 10 months, and with a domestic Ryder Cup team, we had a lot on our plate this year, but sure. I'm looking forward to 2026 getting out there and playing a little bit more golf and practicing, trying to keep my game up to snuff here. But right now I'm focused on supporting our 30,000+ PGA professionals, growing the game, making sure that we continue to ride this wave that you referenced earlier in your show today, to make sure that millions of golfers can enjoy this game going forward. That's what I'm focused on right now.
Well, I hear that, and I hope to get out there with you to hit some. You're giving me two strokes a hole, so it's no problem for me.
We'd love to have you out here. We'd love to have you attend one of our annual meetings, especially our awards night, where you see the best of the best recognized, and I think you'll have a deeper appreciation for the PGA professional and all the great work that our 30,000+ are doing out there to really grow the game and to bring this wonderful sport to so many people around the country that maybe haven't tried it yet. And like I said, it's never too late to take up the game. And that's what the PGA professionals are out there doing day in and day out.
Amen. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I will promise I will take you up on every offer invitation that you are so humbly giving out. I will do that. But thank you so much for all the time and all the dedication that you give to the game. We really appreciate it. And we'll look forward to having you back on the show to talk about everything new and great that's happening in the game.
Sounds good, Michael. Great to be with you again. And thanks for everything you're doing to help, grow the game and talk about the game and get people to enjoy the game.
Roger that. Whatever I can do.
All right.
Take care, Derek.
Thank you. We'll see you, Michael.
Thank you. That's Derek Sprague, CEO of the PGA of America. You know, I'm sitting here just thinking about when we first met all those years ago and how far he has come. He has been, when I met him, he was a servant of the game. Now, all this time later, he's still a servant of the game, so dedicated to growing the game, as all PGA professionals are, to a person. You will meet them, and all they care about is getting you out on the course and making sure that you have a good time, no matter what you want to do. If you want to compete, great. They'll make you better. If you want to just enjoy the game, great. They'll help you enjoy it better. If you just want to, hit some balls, great. Go over to the Topgolf and do that thing, or the Top Tracer. They really are dedicated to this game, the PGA professional, in a way that almost, I haven't really met very many people who are dedicated to their craft and their mission as much as a PGA professional. And Derek Sprague is the perfect person to be leading this organization. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. And we'll definitely get him back in over the course of the coming months and talk about what's new and great in the game. We'll take a quick break and come right back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. I'm very lucky because I get to talk to some of the great minds who lay out the great courses that we get to play. And that goes for course designers from all over the world. But and as many people as I've talked to, and all of them quite talented people in very, very different ways, very, very different personalities, probably the single most intelligent person that I've met is my next guest. He is thoughtful. He is considered. He is really, he can be doing anything he wants to. And I'm really glad that he decided to do golf course design, golf course architecture. It's a boon to all of us. If you haven't played one of his courses, you will soon. Please welcome to the 19th hole, Agustin Pizza. Augie, how are you, my friend?
How are you, my friend? Wow, what an introduction. But you really flatter me. Thank you very much for those beautiful words. And now I have to live up to them.
Yes, you
very
do.
Very good to hear you, Michael.
Yes, you do, my friend. Yes, you do. And it's my pleasure. And you know, if I had more time, I'd do more introduction and talk more about you. But it's easier for you to speak for yourself and let people understand exactly what I'm talking about. First, I have to ask, where are you in the world? So I know you're traveling all the time. Where are you in the world right now?
Right now, we're in San Diego, where I have our office and our home now.
Oh, beautiful. I didn't know that you were living in San Diego now. Outstanding.
Yes, yes, yes. We opened our office 4 years ago. Our design suit. We started in Puerto Vallarta in 2006, and we've had our design studio since then. 2021 was a very good year of coming to the United States and offering our services over here on this side of the border. So we're very, very happy. It's been a great 4 years, and we couldn't be happier between Puerto Vallarta and San Diego. So my weather bracket is somewhere between San Diego and Puerto Vallarta. Can you imagine that?
No, not currently, because we're already buying salt for our driveways here.
Yes,
in Washington D.C. It's getting to be about that time. But yeah, both those places I love very, very much. And it's really good news that you're there. I can visit you more often.
Please do.
Will do. And what I want to start off talking about is what everybody's talking about with golf is the growth of the game and the increased popularity of the game. You've seen the statistics and the numbers about the game growing and new people playing the game and that sort of thing. I just want to get your thoughts on that. Just what it all means to you. Do you believe it, number one? And I know we've seen that before with the popularity of Tiger Woods, a Tiger boom, if you will, right around the 2000s.
Yes.
And that sort of faded away. So I guess number one is, do you believe the statistics? What do you think of the whole growth of the game? And do you think it's something that will stick?
Well, you mentioned the Tiger boom. I was a younger kid, growing, watching the industry unfold. I think, I don't know if it would stick, because nature is, you know, comes in waves, Michael, on anything, on anything. Well, what's the subject? You know, it will come in waves. It will come in frequencies. So we're just living a great frequency right now, a great wave. And that is all that I am worried about right now. I really am not a worrying person like in the future, because at the end we need to concentrate on what we have now and what we can do. And yes, I'm loving it. Of course, I'm loving it. We're living a special moment in our industry where we have all sorts of options, of parallel options. Even in leagues that you can watch, we have options.
Yeah.
In types of games that we can play, we have options. On course, off course. I mean, now we get we can play short courses. We can play multi-purpose golf courses, which we love to design. We can play championship golf courses. Now we're even touching on big golf or regular length golf courses that you know don't necessarily have a back tee. So there's a lot of variations now, and it's a beautiful thing of what's happening to the industry. You know, I think we're more conscious of time, we're more conscious of resources, thus our wellness golf concepts. You know, less resource, more fun, less time consuming, less resource consuming, less intimidating. You know, a little bit more catered towards the non-golfer. So I think we are living a great time in our industry. I'm loving it. I love all the variations. You know, some think it could be a detriment. Some in regards to league play. But I think having the options is a great problem to have.
Well, I say amen to the things that you just said, and it made me consider something from a past era when certain destinations, I won't name any place, but certain destinations, the popular destinations, would really focus on the fact that they had, air quotes, championship courses, championship golf, which implies that it's long, it's difficult, it's tight, it's all of those things make championship golf great. And they would have maybe a major championship site as an anchor there, and all other courses around there would have sort of different aspects of those, of that championship course in it, whether it's the bunkering, whether it's the tight fairways, what have you. And I noticed that with the courses that are becoming popular today, championship is not necessarily the big draw. I think that's a good thing. What do you think?
I'm all for it. We call them golf experiences.
Yeah.
That's how we describe our golf design. It's a golf experience, because at the end, it's how you experience. It's like a great painting, isn't it? When you go to a nice museum, and you're in a you're interpreting what the artists, you know, did. It translates to golf architecture. It does. If you really want to dig into it, it translates, because at the end, it doesn't matter how good or whatever we are as golf architects. It's what matters is the experience. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the beauty of golf course architecture. Our architecture changes depending on the sense of humor of the player, depending on how he did that day. And that is one of the most beautiful things in art. It's the interpretation of the player.
You just said one of the most brilliant things. You do it every time we talk. You say something I've never heard anybody say before. And you just said something about the sense of humor of the golfer. I have never ever heard that before, and it gives me chills. It resonates so much, because on these air quotes championship courses, you need to be humorless. Okay, you almost need to be outside of yourself to get around either. Yeah. So to me, either you're going to shoot a good score or you're going to enjoy it. But it's a very rare person that can do both. And when you talk about the humor of the question, talk about how you incorporate the sense of humor, the sensibility of a golfer when you look at a property and plot out a design.
That depends. It goes with the intricacies of designing.
Yeah.
Let's say an example of British style links course where the ball runs and it can take a left or it can take a right after it's running like 50 yards. You know how that is. I mean, you can even putt from around the green and stuff like that.
Sure.
That's, to me, that's the humor part of it. So when we design, I would like to think three or four features that play with that humor that would probably deceive you in some way. And the ball ends up or could end up in a place that you never thought it could. So the nice rolls or a nice or a type of bounce here, a type of bounce there. Maybe a bunker is trying to tell you something, but it's the opposite. And we love that type of humor and positive humor as well. Yes. I mean, on our greens, we always design a space where you can absolutely miss it. Like completely miss the green, and the green or that section could trickle you down closer or onto the green, depending on the conditions of the golf course. Mm-hmm. So one side would be well defended, and the other side would be completely open, caped, so that you can just hit that side if you know how to read it. So we like to create golf courses where how we think about them is. Where the low handicap or the scratch golfer, let's say he's going to think or he's going to analyze and then play, and the mid or the high handicap, he's going to play and then analyze. That's how we see it. It's kind of like the high handicap will discover things as he goes because his game was probably not there yet in regards to reading the golf course. And again, not every golf course is meant to be read. Some are just bland, normal designs that were done in a design period where there was no, it wasn't very profound.
So when you talk about that, well, I'll ask you this. Can you give me an example of a rather well-known course that exemplifies what you're talking about? Is there an example that you look to, or a couple of examples that? Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I mean, the Link style course in the British Isles is always a great example. The old course is a masterpiece that grows on you. The first time you see it, you probably think it's an abandoned piece of land. Especially if you see it on dry season on winter when it's all brown. So but over there they understand that brown is good. Yes. Yeah. So it's also the education of the golfer, the education of the player, and that is also a factor. So yes, I mean I find inspiration in a lot of things. From Pete Dye all the way down to Alistair McKenzie. It's the let's say TPC Sawgrass is a masterpiece of a player's course. But the beauty of that is that it was defined. It had a perfect why. Why are we doing this? What's the purpose? When you design with a purpose, you come out with the best designs. What is the purpose of a particular golf course? Is it a resort course? Is it a championship golf course? Is it a player's course? Is it a recreational course? That once you help define with the client, the purpose, the why is the most important ingredient to start sculpting. If you don't know where your arrow is pointing precisely, then what are you designing for? And you usually see it, I'll give you a general example of you know, you usually see a description on a golf course saying it's great for the scratch golfer and great for the high handicap. That to a certain extent, of course, yes, and strictly in the sense of the conversation, it's not necessarily possible. Because it depends, two things are usually dependent on the toughness or on the easiness. And one is obviously the architecture, the land, and the setup. So if you're setting the greens to 12 or 13 stimp, it's not gonna be fun for the rest of the guys. Hmm. If you have tight lies around the green, it's not gonna be fun for the rest of the guys. And if you have fluffy outside so that you can, you know, so the ball sits on top and a mid handicap can just chip it in easier, that's not gonna be necessarily a lot of fun for the scratch golfer because they like tight lies. So how can you, it's too ambiguous and too vague to say that that a golf course is set up for both sides.
We are talking to my good friend, I will call him Professor, Augustine Pizza here on the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. I always feel like I should be taking notes because there's going to be an exam later and I'm going to get 2 college credits for doing this interview. It's always just, I love doing these. We talked about a little bit about what can go into a course in terms of the layout, the setup, the speed of the greens, all these things. And of course, the patron, the guy who's wanting to have this course built, has something to do with it too. Do you have situations where you go in with one sensibility about what can be done there and the owner of the property has something completely different and you have to find your way to a compromise of the two ideals for what a golf course should be?
That's a very good one, and that applies to any, I think, to any artistic career, Michael. Hmm. As an architect by trade, I think that you know, it could happen the same way with housing development or building. You know, the first years of your life, let's put it this way: the first years of your life, the client's going to tell you what you're doing and how much you're going to charge. The second stage of your life, of your career, it's going to be if you're doing things right and you went the, you know, and you want your way and you believe in yourself, then it's either or. It's either. Sorry, it's they'll tell you how much you're gonna charge, but not necessarily what you are going to do, or vice versa. Yes, what you're gonna do. But not necessarily what you're going to charge. And the best stage is when magic comes, is when you get to choose your clients as well. So that's what I wanted to get at. We're very lucky now that that clients that look for us, that call us, is because they want something unique. They want something special in the golf course. They want something out of the box. They want Pizza Golf to give them something that, you know, maybe they've never seen before, or it's out there with a lot of character, with this or that, depending on what we're looking for, of course. And yes, you will have a conversation, going back now to a more serious answer. You like anything you design, you will have a conversation, and you should have conversations of design philosophy, of likes, don't likes, etc. And then you can come up with a plan to design. All of that should be done beforehand, before you even move your pencil, is interviewing the client, knowing the why again, and both of you being able to knowing exactly with the why, and then you can start talking. Yeah. So it's a little bit of everything. And all of this, Michael, you know, it's just my experience. Again, I am also a player in the game of life, and with my sense of humor going through it. So this is just my opinion and my experience and my thoughts on my experience in golf architecture.
Well, I had a look at the website where your opinion and your thoughts about golf are played out and put into play, and they are absolutely stunning. And I can't wait to get out and play a few of your courses. They just are absolutely beautiful. One thing that I did notice when looking at the site is a term that you use about the butterfly effect. And I think I have one interpretation of what that means. I've never really heard it applied to golf. So I'd like to hear your explanation for the butterfly effect and how you use that to in the course of golf course design.
Well, that was an adaptation that we created because when we came up with the unique layout of having four loops of six. And by having four loops of six, you can imagine a four-leaf clover or a butterfly with four wings, per se. And by having four loops of six in the form of a four-leaf clover, like I mentioned, and everything and all of the four loops coming back to the clubhouse, you have a nucleus, you have an energy node right there. And now, because if let's imagine every hole is from one to six, yes? And now let's imagine that you color code it, so yellow, red, blue, and white. And now, since you only have to play, or since you're only playing three out of the four loops to create an 18-hole golf experience, and it doesn't matter where you begin, and it doesn't matter which three you grab, that those that gives you 24 opportunities of playing a different golf course. So with this 4x6 model, you have 24 different golf courses to play, and you can play depending on the loops you play. We designed them so that you can play a par 70, a par 71, a par 72, at the famous 7,000, at the famous 7,000 yard mark plus. So that is the concept, and why the butterfly effect? Because the butterfly effect is a very interesting theory, where a small change in design or a small change in the world creates ripples and creates this movement around the world. The butterfly effect mentions an example of a butterfly flapping its wings in the Amazons in Brazil, and the ripple effect could cause a hurricane up in the East Coast in Florida, or on the side of the Pacific in Mexico. That is the theory behind it, is how can a small thing like a flit, like a butterfly wing could create that ripple that glides into the energy and create something different and more powerful in the future and in another part. So that's why we grab that theory. And because with an extra four loop of six, we think that layouts of golf could change in the future with this 4x6 format.
Just want to let our listeners know that you might think you're listening to Masterclass, but you're not. And it's not Malcolm Gladwell. This is I was golf course designer Augustin Pizat.
Hey. William and Michael, and I haven't even had my coffee yet. I'm still in Pacific time over here on this side.
again, I'm making notes my two credits. That's all I want to get out of this class.
Well, you're making these questions that I don't take lightly. I'm in a time of my life, Michael, that I can't chit chat. If I'm not having a nice deep conversation, I disconnect. And so I thank you for it, and I appreciate this interview.
Well, I really appreciate it too, as do the listeners.
That will depend on their sense of humor when they're listening to it.
Amen to that, bro. Amen to that. And believe me, I will get emails and I will pass them on to you if they're angry. So they won't get that. But I just want to get a couple more thoughts from you on, I know that most of the courses that I see are outside the U.S. Are there any plans to further the Augustine, the Pisa golf empire inside the U.S.?
The empire. Yes, definitely. It's a big capital. Yes. But we would have to come back to that in the beginning of the year, if you don't mind another chat.
Sure.
Because for now, I can't disclose. I can. But if to answer in another way your question, I mean, if somebody saw TGL earlier this year and had an opportunity to see a few, you know, different holes out there. Well, those are mine, and wow. And that was part. We're very happy and privileged and honored to be one of the three designers for what happened and what you saw or somebody could have seen in January, February, and March of this year.
Well, fantastic. That's great news. Congratulations. I will be on the lookout for that.
Thank you.
One other question I'm going to ask is what I'm asking everybody through the end of this year is about the Ryder Cup. Of course, the Europeans with a great victory there. But somehow with all the great golf, the story seems to be what happened off the course. Any thoughts about the Ryder Cup on your end? As a designer, as a golfer, as a person, both on the events on the course and off the course?
Well, I really don't like to get into it. I do. I mean, I will definitely answer your question with, let's say that's a very good example of how the golf course could probably been set up differently.
Yeah.
Yes. So again, that's just going back to that part of our chat is the setup. That was probably something that could have been planned or could have been planned differently. And in hindsight, of course, it's very easy to critique. That's why I don't get entangled in these things, Michael, because at the end, it's very easy to critique in hindsight, you know. The people that really took the risks are the ones that made the decisions beforehand. They took the risk.
Yeah.
And that is what we do in our architecture. We take risks with what we present, with what we invent, with what we create. We take risks. Yeah. And so to me, it's very important, like somebody or people that critique or that are, you know, there's no risk taking in to a certain extent in critiquing. The important thing is to do it.
Right. Right.
To be responsible for something that you did, whether it was a good decision or bad decision, only time tells, and results and stuff like that. Well, what happened in the Ryder Cup? Other than that, it was a crazy atmosphere.
Yeah.
It was a crazy atmosphere, Michael. It was. I've been to, what is it? Five Ryder Cups and two Presidents Cup. It was brutal out there. It was brutal, man. I thought I was in a soccer match in Argentina, man.
Yeah.
It was brutal.
Yeah, it was really something, and there's a lot to say about it, but you can say it was really an outstanding showing by the European team, and I really enjoyed the golf for sure.
The Ryder Cup, Michael, sorry for the interruption. The Ryder Cup has to be every, you know, every month, man. That is such a beautiful event.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful event. You just the energy that's out there from the players. It is something beautiful to watch. It's something that everybody needs to go to a Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
And now next, in 27 in Adair Manor.
Yeah.
I can't wait for that one. That's going to be, and it's a beautiful place as well.
It really is. And I'll see you there.
Super.
Last question I'm going to ask is there a course that that you haven't seen or haven't visited that you would like to see and like to visit, both as a player and as a creator, as an architect?
Oh, of course. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I've had the opportunity, depending on where on the perspective and who's listening, I've had the privilege to play 1/3 of the top 100, which I still have a way to go, but I'm not fixed in that. I'm not trying to get it, but I've been lucky enough to play some of the best golf courses in the world. And like any architect or artist, it's everything that we design. Or let's put it this way: you cannot create anything that you haven't seen. Everything that when we visit a golf course, we start seeing things, and that comes into your creative liquefier per se, your blender, and then other things come out if you're sensitive enough. But so yes, I've had the opportunity. Of course, I want to go to two other places. I haven't been down to Cape Kidnappers. I haven't seen, I haven't been to Vietnam to see other beautiful golf courses that are happening there. I've had those things that I would like to do, because it's not only about the golf course, but it's also about the cultural experience. I believe every time that you're out there playing a golf course, it should also be a cultural experience. Should also, I'm not a big fan of going into a resort and just staying there and not going out in town or and doing something local. But that's just me. But that's what I like to do. So the cultural experience that you can have with the beautiful golf course and the exchange, the cultural exchange in where you're at, it's what moves me, to be honest.
I get you. Yeah, as usual, you are giving answers that are unique to the guests on our show. I feel like should charge for this show. When you're a guest on the show, I feel like people are getting an education for free. But I just want to thank you for not only the work that you've done, but the work that you're going to do. I just look so forward to seeing what you're going to produce, because it's going to be thoughtful, it's going to be meaningful, and it's going to be a credit to the game of golf. So, and thank you for all of that. But most of all, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Michael. Always looking forward to it. And I can't wait for next time.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see you soon. Yes.
Okay.
Roger that.
Thank you. Have
Roger
a good one.
That. Thank
Have a great
you.
Weekend.
Thank you. That is Augie Pizza. He is number one. I just am glad he lets me call him Augie. That's a great honor in and of itself. But this is, to me, one of the most intelligent people in the game. The way he looks at it, as not only from a golf point of view, but from a global point of view, from an intellectual point of view, and he brings so many things into the game, and you'll see that when you get on one of his golf courses. And I can't wait until he gets more land and more opportunities to come into the United States and put courses here, because when you have one, there are going to be five, and there's going to be 10 and 25, and I think very quickly he's going to become one of the most requested and sought after architects in the game, both by people who build courses and by people who play them. His courses are that good, and I literally can't wait. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole.
Well, as they say in the business, that's it and that's all for this edition of the 19th Hole. I want to thank my very, very, very special guests. The head of the PGA of America, Derek Sprague, he was so good in giving us information about where the game is, what the PGA actually does. I mean, we know our PGA professional at our local course, but I think we underestimate the commitment that gets put into the game by each one of those individuals. And Derek has internalized that, and he's allowed himself to bring it out to all of us during that wonderful interview. So I want to thank him very much for doing that. And of course, my good friend, Augustine Pizat, he is just, quite frankly, a genius. And this guy would be world known for whatever he decided to do. Thank God he decided to do golf courses, because we get to go out and experience his genius on a day-to-day basis. I know he's got some good things coming up, and I can't wait to see what he does in the United States, because it is going to be extraordinarily special, I guarantee you. You can get this podcast and all podcasts on Apple Podcasts. You can get us on Spotify and other places where exceptional podcasts are found. Of course, thank you for listening. We appreciate every single one of you who listens to this show. We'll be back again next week with more great golf stuff. So in the meantime, even on the East Coast, where it's starting to get a little chilly, put on a sweater. Go out, hit some balls. And when you do, do your best to hit them straight. Michael Williams, 19th Hole.